everyone, and welcome to episode 87 of the Paddle Unlimited podcast. I think it's 87. I always forget. Like, I always like put the name like in the title of the recording and then I forget. But I'm your host, Gil. Welcome. If this is the first time you're joining us, and today I am joined by two underworld guests, Rob and Corey. How you guys doing?
Hello there.
Doing great. Thanks.
Actually, a good day for that intro.
Oh yeah. Oh, we're gonna get into that. came back from Paris. Doing the limited sector, came back on Sunday, actually. And a lot to talk about. We'll probably talk about that a little bit in the future, but it was a pleasure meeting. If you're a listener that I got to meet, it was a pleasure meeting you. There's like Ben, Thomas, a bunch of other people. Like there's so many names. And I'm sorry if I didn't say it out loud here, but appreciate your support internationally. That's always a great feeling. Knowing that Paddle Unlimited is now like truly an international kind of like podcast, strive to always give you guys good content. So if you haven't seen it, I also did like a Paris experience video. So check that out. It's on the YouTube channel. And it actually did pretty well.
Is it you eating baguettes and croissants and like
I didn't go full vlog. I'm not like that, but enough for you to see some of the interesting changes that are interesting things. I'm gonna do a video.
It's really cool. That's stuff that people don't always get to go to, right? I was living vicariously through you, Gil. So that was a lot of fun. So I really appreciate when you do that.
Yeah, and I'm gonna do a comparison. Because I've actually been to multiple countries, doing multiple sectors, multiple regionals. Mm. So from last year till now, there has been significant changes. So I'm going to do a video probably after the Milwaukee one. But stay tuned. Anyway, before we go on to the segments, which we do here, let's do the giveaway raffle for this Chancellor Palpatine playmat. Showing it on the screen. We had a variety of people do it. Again, whenever we give stuff away, it's always free. I'm not asking you to pay for shipping or anything like that. Let's see. What do we got? Generate number 19. Who are you? TC McLean. Congratulations. Congrats. On winning this playmat. We'll get the contact to you as soon as I can. After this podcast and recording. Congratulations. Hope you enjoy the mat. I do have some other giveaways for the future, but we'll save that. Save that for another time. What was I going to say? Oh, and then the other piece of logistical news before we go into it is that the Paddle Unlimited League tournament number 2 has started this past weekend. We have 3 more matches. We have about 22 participants. I am included, so there was no bye in there. But it's some interesting spice. I love this Padawan format, which is all commons, like cards and stuff like that. We still have to do analysis for the meta, I'll say. But it's been really interesting just seeing in the background. I'm going to do a video about that as well. Got some interesting prizing. So we'll stay tuned if you're a listener and are in the Padawan Unlimited League. Anyway, so let's get on to the segments. Corey, for collection. Yes. What do you got for us, man?
Well, it's spoiler season. Let's get into some more spoilers, guys. We had some pretty interesting ones. A new leader, which we've also potentially predicted here, is coming out. And that would be Emphas Nest.
You called it.
Yep.
The aspects I got completely wrong. I didn't get either of them. But Aggression Heroism, Emphas Nest leader. She is a flip on 5/3/7 stat line. So love the 7.
Oh, she got that stat line.
But the leader ability is when you use an on attack ability, you may pay 2 resources to exhaust this leader. If you do, use that ability again. That like opens up so many interesting lines and options for you. It's crazy. That is a high cost, but there is a lot you can do there. And then on the flip side, you attack with her and you get that same ability for free. So that was really cool. I'm excited to see what people come up with this leader, because I think there's a lot of spice here. potentially might not be good, but it's definitely spicy.
Definitely some spice.
Yeah, her flip side specifically, since you don't have to pay for it anymore. Because on attack twice is not necessarily, in my opinion, very good right in the beginning, right? Mm. Because you have to pay. You want to build units on the board, right?
Right.
Like, it's fine. But, like, on five, I mean, go to town, you know? No. like, why would you not? You know what I'm saying? That's fantastic. I think that showcase, I mean,
can't wait to see it.
Based on the Vader one that we saw today dropped, God. The Darth Vader one, it's that Empress Nest showcases could probably be like really looking good looking showcase,
dude. Yeah. That Vader showcase that we saw today, absolutely gorgeous. Holy,
I know
it's just
spoilers.
yeah,
you know what? I'm excited to see what it looks like in the flesh, like with actual foiling, because like you know the online digital images never really do justice.
Yeah,
I'll say they never really do true justice. So like we're gonna see, you know, like the object source sliding from the reds into the blacks. Like I just feel like it's gonna be a really good looking showcase. Like very clearly,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. I agree. And I don't even know if he's going to be a particularly strong leader, but my gut says it's going to be an expensive showcase just because of the popularity.
Do we think it's gonna look? Do you think Enfys is gonna look better than that?
We'll see.
I think the thing is, like, yeah, Darth Vader is so iconic. It's hard to, like, do better. But Empress Nest has got a lot of cool, like, visual looks and elements to her. So I'm excited to see what it looks like for sure. But, that, like, as far as aggression goes, aggression was eating this week as far as the spoilers.
Yeah.
There's a couple there. I don't know if you want to point out any other ones, Rob.
Well, Airy jumps out to me, and this is basically just the heroic version of, well, it's not exactly, but it's a heroic version of
Ruthless Raider.
Oh my God, Ruthless Raider. It's not exactly the same, but same point cost. So it has slightly different stat line, but lower attack, but higher base health. And instead of it being a one played, one defeated, it's just an on attack ability that is 2 damage to an enemy ground unit. So it is specifying ground and 2 damage to a base. And now you compare this with Empress on 6 resources and do 4 damage to a base and potentially 2 instances of 2 damage or 4 damage to a single unit. Pretty good. Thermal detonator also is another one, but you guys can kind of expound on that one because that one looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, go. What do you know what that one does? Have you seen that?
It's an up. Oh, I was gonna say, Gil, you got it.
No, thermal detonator is a red card. I'm assuming. It's the one that what does it do? It like when
it's
been exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an upgrade.
So
right?
You attach it to a non-vehicle unit, and then when the attached unit gains, when defeated, this enemy unit, if it's ready, will deal 2 damage to each enemy ground unit. That could be pretty interesting. And I will shout out our good buddy Dinosaur. Had a great video. He got to reveal this card and show a little like puzzle as far as how you could use this to your advantage. It was pretty cool to see.
Yeah. Specifically, Thrawn 4 is going to love this card. Double triggering a 1 defeated to deal 4 to everything on the ground. Like, poof.
Yeah, as long as it's ready, you can do all this damage to the ground and it hits everything. So that's pretty
neat. If you play Chimera.
Yep.
Yeah. No, interesting. I think a lot of these cards are going to just really change the game. I think that like it's pretty well accepted at this point that like this set is probably one of the better designed ones since set one, and is fundamentally going to change everything. If you disagree with that, leave a message in the comments. Let us know, because I would love to see.
Don't think that's a hot take, but
you know I don't know. There's, people have strong opinions when it comes to TCGs. From what I've learned over the course of the year and a half or so, 2 years that I've been playing TCGs at this point, like. I can't take anything for granted. I can't take like assumptions. You know what I'm saying? Like I could be like, yo, this is the best card. Like Saw Gerrera, this new Saw Gerrera leader is like the best card in the game. And like 51% of people might agree with me. And then the 49 are like, no, you're crazy, Gil.
That might be a hot take though. Yeah. So, you know,
yeah, I don't think it's the best, but it's really fantastic for Twin Sun specifically, that format. Saw Gerrera is fin. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's going to shine. These non hero villain leaders, they're gonna shine there.
Yeah, and you get four colors, especially
in aspect. Yeah,
tell us.
Yeah, so like, so Saw Gerrera is a very unique leader in that, like, it's kind of like DJ. DJ from last set had two yellows, right? So that means that you could play three different aspects if you really wanted to, potentially, with the leader and, like, your, and oh no, two. But, like, this one, you could actually play three or four in Twin Sun specifically because you have red, green. It's the, there's no heroism or villainy, so you're not locked. Right. So you can play another leader that's like blue heroism, and then your base is yellow, and then you have all the colors of the rainbow aside from like the black color. Like, and like, it's just, it's awesome. Like, this is one of those sets, like, they definitely planned ahead with like the Twin Suns, like, production that's going to happen this year. They even spoiled some cards with like the new, the C3PO card that came out. That's like, you drop it, you have to give it an opponent, but your opponent can use an action ability to do damage. It's like, they are really, like, really pushing. By they, I mean FFG is really pushing the different game formats, I think. And they're really exploring. And these cards are, like, pretty well designed, I think. So definitely excited for it. And with that comes more popularity, which means that I think what the investments we make now in whatever cards we have are going to go back up a little bit. Maybe not, like, super duper crazy prices, but I can imagine that. There's, you know, people are buying, like, hey, I want to buy Carbonite. Like, people are, like, as in, like, people are saying that, like, I'm going to buy, oh, I thought I was going to buy, not going to buy Carbonite anymore. I'm definitely going to do it. I'm like, oh, okay. That's, you know, people are going to spend money now.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I know, like, Gil, we saw your boy pop up also.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Hello there,
Obi-Wan. Hello there. We alluded to it earlier in the podcast.
I'm going to talk about this. You can't take this away from me, guys. a new legendary card dropped today, and I am very optimistic about it. But I'm an incurable optimist. It is a 7-cost heroism unit. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi during the Clone Wars. So it's like the Legends of the Force leader Kenobi, right? It's blue green heroism. Not that blue green heroism needed more help, apparently.
But it's getting it.
But it's a 7/7 Force Jedi Republic classic Obi. But its ability is that, which is a little wonky. I don't know how this is going to work out. But it's Sentinel. While you control 7 or more units, their printed power is considered to be 7. And printed HP is considered to be 7. Nice. So like, you have 7 units. They're all 7/7s. With Obi-Wan a 7/7, it's just like, I don't know how we're gonna get like tokens out there, but it just makes me happy to think that like you could potentially do something with this card, and it's like you're gonna win the game if you play this card, and you, for some reason, you have an entire board of like 7 units, and you play this, you're winning the game that turn.
I am the Senate, right? That's a green card, for 6. So you play that first, you create 5 spy tokens.
Yep.
And then you get Obi next turn, and you probably have your leader out. You got 7 right there, and everybody, all those spies just became 7s.
Raid 2 on top of it, so they're actually like 9/7 on attack.
What is the single ignition reactor thing card again? It's the red blue one?
That's a blue red villain. That's 8. So yeah, you get the Obi out, and then everything dies the next turn.
I mean, hey. If you get the swing in first.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You got to get those spies out first. Then you drop Obi on turn resource 7, and then you're hitting with 5 spy units for, you know, 35. Sure. There you go.
Random question. So, do you guys organize your cards?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, how are you going to organize your cards with this new set? Like,
multi-enemies are just going to be their own thing. Like, that's just how it's going
to
be.
Okay,
so
you're
like,
not
I might divide them by like non-heroic, heroic, and villainy. But then outside of that, it's like they're all just going in a single slot. So it's like villainy heroics, all my villainy multi-aspects, all my heroic multi-aspects, and then just the regular multi-aspects.
I think the way I'm going to organize. Well, no, Corey, go ahead. I want to hear what you say first, because you guys have more experience with
magic and stuff. They have those dual or multi-aspect cards and stuff. So like, there is like kind of separate a little bit. But for this with Star Wars, I'm going to do it by the card number. So it's already done that, right? So it's like blue, green, red, yellow, And so you're just going through that process.
So then it's like blue, 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 green, blue, red, blue, yellow, heroism, yeah. or villainy, then heroism. Like, that's how you're going to organize it.
Yeah.
So you're,
yeah.
you're going to keep, but are you guys both going to keep them separate, like their own things? You're not going to try to integrate it with like the rest of your collections?
Well, I keep each set separate. So
yeah, I do that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I should do that.
Yeah.
I should.
So
yeah,
like I have like those big boxes with like the four rows that extend out. So each set is in one of those boxes and they're just separated.
Yeah, same. It helps me, like, if I know a card is from a specific set, I don't have to go digging through an entire set of those things. Like, I just go by or entire, like, you know, deep row of all those things. I just go by set. And it makes it easier for finding stuff. And then when stuff rotates out, it's easy to kind of put it back and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, I think, I mean, it's going to be, for me, it's going to be by set. And then, you know, all of the standard sorting, which is single color villainous, single color heroic, and then just multi-aspect.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Do you, I don't know how people do this. Do you separate the rares and legendaries from like the chaff cards? And
I
like, do they go in their own binder?
So I have my big box for my bulk, and then I have like smaller like card boxes that are singles, like
same
rows or whatever. Yeah. And that's where my legendaries and my rares are. Plus, then I have a hyperspace that's separate also. So hyperspaces are separated, rares, legendaries, and then... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm the same way. So it's like you have the single loader, right, Corey? Like the...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I do the singles for like rares, and then I do singles for hyperspaces. Foils go in the garbage.
I have too many to put in a binder. It's
one. Legendaries do go in a binder, actually. Legendaries and prestiges go in a binder.
Wow, fascinating. I feel like I'm over. Okay, so what I do, right? So this is a collection segment, so we can still talk about collection, like organizing. What I've been doing now, actually, is for the set, each the rares and legendaries will get its own binder for the set, right? And it's like across, like it's a 3x3 like page,
right?
And it's like three of across the board, like. And then it's organized by like the power or the not the power, the
cost.
The number I'm on ranking. So like if it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's gonna be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, right? It's gonna be like that's how it's organized down. And then I stick the hyperspaces and foils in one pocket behind the regular one.
Mm-hmm.
So like they're just there to have, right? But like I'm gonna prioritize the front, like the ones that are like normal. And all the bulk goes into like a box, like you guys, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe I don't know if I'm too organized or like not organized enough.
I think
because like you guys are separating it like hyperspaces. It's like I don't separate them.
It's a little of both, I think. For you, like you get to like open a binder and sift through things in a nice, neat order. I'm like going like this, like
trying to like doing the
find the carbs.
So, I'm gonna show this on the screen, like. So this is SEC. This is Secrets of Power. So like I have the leaders. I have a copy of all the leaders, like one copy in like the first two pages. And then it goes like blue. There's all my blues, right?
Mm.
These are all, you know, and it goes blue, green, red, villainy, or blue, green, like red, yellow. And then it goes all the way to the back where, and I have like foils and stuff in there. Like if I'm missing like cards or whatever, it kind of just tells me like, oh, I need another, get another copy. But like I guess I'm a monster because I have like the hyperspaces also with like the regular cards.
Absolute monster.
How could you kill?
That's unacceptable, you, Corey,
sir. OCD man.
Never mind.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I like to bling out my deck, so I want to know where the hyperspaces are. So like if I'm like digging for them, I want them kind of all in one space. So I do you know take my hyperspaces and organize them by cost and color, so I can go through and find them easily. So if I'm like looking for a specific card, and mind you, my rares and legendaries do stay with the other hyperspaces. Do stay with the other rares and legendary hyperspaces because there's fewer of those. But for like my commons and uncommons, they're all just in one like hyperspace box, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Before we move on to the next segment, any last card you want to talk about, Corey? Like you're like, Gil, I need time. I need to talk about this one thing.
No, we got the Vel Sarthra leader. Is that how you say your name?
Sartha?
Sartha. Yeah. Sartha, got her leader. I'm very curious about it because I like the idea that you have to give something to get something. And
yeah.
Early on, it could be like bad maybe, but later on, like you're just pumping up your stuff. I think that's could be pretty interesting. So basically, just real quick, because I know we're going to move on, but you can use an action, no cost, just as an action, you can give an experience token to any unit, no restrictions there, but you are giving a credit token to your opponent. So
I think in limited, she's going to be sneaky good because limited, you're buffing for sure. Your unit. Yeah. You're buffing your unit every turn, and then there's probably cards in your hand that you get to steal or destroy credits in return. Ah, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I think she's going to be pretty good, like, in limited. I could be wrong. Who knows? But, like, interesting. All right. Yeah. So, thanks for that. Let's move on to the next segment. Rob, talking about meta. Has anything changed? Has anything changed since last week?
Well, are you a fan of Han Solo? Because if you are, let me tell you, it's a good time to be playing Han Solo. Han of all stripes, all varieties, was absolutely dominating this weekend. Specifically, Han won yellow, took 5 PQs this weekend. It had an absurd conversion rate of like near 50%. It was an utter monster. And having played I'm currently, you know, just playing Sabe yellow because I've been trying to get a feel for the leader, and right now, unfortunately, it's just kind of like the less good version of Han 1 yellow, but that's okay. But what I will say is that this deck is just, it's a monster. It ramps your stuff out. You get to play a lot of really good, you know, tempo and control-y type cards that are in this deck. It's also just fast. You're getting to do, you know, I mean, like, Faith in Your Friends is a very, very strong open for double yellow, and you know, it really sets the tempo. So this deck is just really, really a monster. I don't know if you guys have played against it.
It's not that it's unbeatable. It's just really good into a lot of the matchups that are just happening right now. Like,
also true.
You know, like the Han 2s just can, like, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no, it's a very powerful deck. I play it. I haven't played against it in locals like for like a week. Aside from that, you know, but that's interesting. Han 1, but a different color has started to dominate.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, it's pretty close to what the DJ deck was, just without the DJ tech, right? It's,
yeah,
correct.
And I think just,
got a couple more tools from, you know, power and these recent sets that really put it over the top. Now that it can be viable again, like you said, Faith in Your Friends and stuff. But Cunning is just such a great card. It's like playing that for 4. Oh my god.
Yeah, cutting on 4 is really, really rough. And that's where the value is in that card. I think at 6, it's not as great, but at 4, yeah, it's good.
Uh-huh. I think a card that like has really also made that yellow in general, especially with Han 1, good, the Visago card. Mm-hmm. Because Visago is a 3-cost, 3-4. You can play turn 1. It's kind of hard to beat because it's a 3-4 body. But what it does is when you attack the next turn, like, you show your top card, and an opponent has to make a choice. Either they pay 1 resource, or you get to draw the card. Which, like, totally nullifies, like, the hard part about playing Han is that you run out of cards in your hand. So it's, like, it's a lose-lose situation for your opponent. They're either playing below curve, or they're giving you more stuff for your hand for you to play. So, like, it's, like, just really solid. I think, actually, like, the one deck that I think Han 1 yellow has a problem with, and I don't know, maybe it could just be me, but I think it doesn't really win against Cad Tarkintown.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, I can see it. Yeah. I mean, it's well, and Cad 1 Tarkintown has been a or Cad 2, I guess technically is in a set 2, but Cad has been, you know, specifically positioned against Han 2 ECL, which also had 3 wins this weekend, by the way. So it's not like that's going away either, because, you know, damaging units and then CAD pinging makes it such that, like, you can deal with things a lot easier. I do think it does have some play. It's a bit of a, I think it's a bit of a race, though. The difference being that you have Tarkintown to deal with stuff.
Were there any Han 4 leaders that, like, Only Han 1 and Han 2, right? Not Han 4.
There was one Han 4 Tarkin town win, I believe. And the
win?
Other interesting,
really?
Yeah, there was just one. It was just one.
Okay, so all Hans won this yep. past weekend.
Yes, correct.
That's wild. That's actually pretty wild.
Yeah. The other interesting one was, and we can shout out Ian Lego Pizza. He took down a PQ with Han 1 Tarkin Town, not Han 4, Han 1 Tarkin Town. So that
Ian is such an innovator. If you haven't, yep. So we had an interview with him at the Galactic Championships last year. He was second place. So watch that video in the Galactic Championships like playlist if you so desire. It's about 10 minutes. You get his thoughts on like how Baltha Network built the deck and what was going on through his head. That like, it was like literally fresh, like 10 yep. minutes after his like hit the second place. Like I was talking with him. So check that out. He's a nice guy. Always been an innovator, and he's obviously very skilled because he took Han 1 Tarkin Town deck to a PQ victory. That's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely wow. wild. Okay, but in general, in the meta outside of Han, like there has been a couple other things you know that we've been seeing, and I mean, again, when you talk about top eights in general, the numbers are pretty consistent from last week. Kat is still up there. You know, Hans of all stripes, Kylo, Yoda, and a little bit of Sabe in there as well. But when you look at it overall. In general, Han 2 ECL has been rising. It went up in plays and overall conversion rate, although it didn't do as well as Han 1 Yellow did. But, you know, the suspects that have been there for the past couple of weeks are still the suspects that are here. You know, there's been a little bit of rise and fall as they kind of play against each other and, you know, in individual metas as they play against each other and people try to guess what the meta is going to be at any specific local event, but it's been the same. It's been the Hans, both 1 and 2. It's been Kylo Data Vault. It's been Yoda Data Vault. It's been Cad Tarkin Town. So like all these guys that you're seeing week to week, probably at your locals with people who play meta decks, they're still there. There's nothing that's come out of left field yet, which I think is actually really interesting because we're about 2 weeks away from Milwaukee, which means that I think part of the reason we're not seeing a lot of change right now is because people don't want to give away their tech. Like people don't want to, you know, suddenly play a deck that they've been brewing to go against these Hans and give that away. They want to surprise people who are going to show up with these Han decks and things like that. So, I mean, I think that's something to think about going forward, you know, that, you know, if you got yep. something that's going to play well into Han, guess what? People have been playing these last couple of weeks. It's spoiler. Yeah, it's a lot yeah, of Han.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I think part of it is also the room for innovation in this space right now is not necessarily high. Because like a lot of the mechanics, like the good mechanics are good mechanics. Like why stray away from them? I think that yep. like, I think there's a part of it that's like, I think part of it is like people don't want to give away their tech, but those who are like Ian, it's like with a Han 1 Tarkin Town are just already doing it in their PQs. Right. You know, we'll see. I think yeah. that like, cause it's also at the end of a set. So like if there was correct. Any of true innovations, I feel like it would have occurred. So we would have already started to see them. But yeah, no, let's see. That's going to be a wild weekend. That's a 3-day
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Set. So, I'm sure Hans will be doing well. Sorry, Corey.
No, like I was going to say, do you think, cause so Han 1 and Han 2 was about 30% of the top eights, right? So yep. in these PQs. Do you think for Milwaukee, we're going to see a minimum like 3 to 4 Hans in the top 8?
Ooh, 3 to 4 Hans. I don't think we'll get half. I think we'll get 2 or 3.
You do think?
Hans.
Yeah.
I think so. Because you're going to this is the regionals where like the best players are at. Like the sector in Mesa was good, but like. Regionals is going to be way bigger. Like people are going to invest in that. And like, you're going to have people coming from outside the country more to go to that yeah. event because mm-hmm. they also have cars that you don't have access to. So there's going to be collectors and stuff there as well. And I think that like with the increase in talent, the increased talent pool and that, you're going to have a wider stratification, especially like Plot Palpatine, BGV, like that one, mm-hmm. that was one that placed top 20 in Mesa. you know, like it's right there, that I think that like some of those can potentially punch through given the right trajectory of matches. You know, if as long as they don't play, as long as like Akira doesn't play like a Hantu ECL, it's gonna like spike the tournament. Like it's gonna get up there. You know, like that's just one weak spot, right?
Well, and I think that's kind of what's very interesting about this is like normally with Han Won specifically, because he's really kind of pushing above curve, the hard counter to him in a lot of ways has been kind of two things. One, like hand discard. So like hand hate has been one way to deal with Han because he's getting rid of cards to ramp. So his options become more limited. Now, to your point, Gil, he's been buoyed a little bit by Visago, but there is some... you know, there's still that, like, if you pillage their hand, there's only so much that they can take with that because they are still getting rid of cards to ramp. The other one has been control, but because of Han 2 ECL, which is an incredibly fast deck, not to say that Han 1 isn't either, but it's playing, you know, bigger units, whereas Han 2 ECL is playing both big units and fast. The stuff that would normally feast on that is kind of being held in check. So, you know, that's it's kind of funny that, you know, the way that it's working out is like each version of Han is sort of buoying up the other version of Han in some ways and kind of keeping the natural predators out of the cycle.
That's true. Hans are a menace.
They are. Well, all of them are going
that rogue, that scoundrel.
We finally got a Han that might not be great anymore.
That's true. The newest Han does not look particularly spectacular.
In the Law Han.
So we really think that just the next few weeks are just going to be more Han, Yoda, potentially Piaf is still getting played a bunch.
It blows my mind, and it blows a lot of people's mind that I talk to about this stuff too. It's like this deck, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, because I played it, it's a lot of fun to play. There's just something cool about like being like, yep, here's a triangle on turn 4, here's a triangle on turn 5, here's a triangle on turn 6, and it just never converts. Never.
I think, hey, if they want to play that deck, let them play that deck. If it's because it is, you're right, it is fun. Like, If you get your engine going, like, it feels amazing for sure. Yeah, you know, so I get that. You know what I'm actually concerned about? I'm actually concerned of a rise of Palpatine.
Which one?
Not Plotpatine.
Emperor?
Like, Emperor Palpatine. Yeah. Like, people sleep on the card on that control deck, right? And then they're like, Palpatine's good. And, like, all it takes is one Palpatine to dodge, like, all the Hantu, which is possible, like dodging the Hantu ECLs, and like you have like this, like really hard to deck to have to compete with in the top 64, top 8. Like he can be really, really crazy, especially, you know, with his when the flip turns where he can like attack a unit, take a unit, defeat a unit all at the same time, kind of thing. Like,
flip the board so much, it's crazy. And then like you have to wait for all of your big stuff. Like normally you want to, as a, you know, Han Blue, to like, you have your Bo-Katans that you're waiting on and getting them out. You can't play them because then you're damaging your stuff, and then he just takes it from you.
Yeah, he doesn't even have to do the constantly attack. Waiting. Just flip.
Yeah, it's tough. And then yellow has so many tools to discard cards, make you discard the good stuff with Bazine and Garindadin. So yeah, it's just so slow in the beginning.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's just really slow because they're 1/3s and they're not doing anything. But yeah, the combination, you're gonna say.
Yeah, it's like Bazine's like, let me seek a card, discard it. All right, I'm gonna play Garindan. All right, I'm gonna discard this other card. Now you're like, you're playing this one dinky unit, maybe. I agree. I am fascinated by Palpatine. I want to play him. I'm too scared to play control ever. You know, just take.
You need the strength to do what's necessary.
I need the strength to murder on. It's funny because I got all these showcases. I got a Palpatine showcase. I traded with somebody months ago for it. I'm gonna play this. I'm like, no, I can't. I can't play Palpatine. I have a Kylo showcase. I'm like, I want to play this, but like, no, I can't play Kylo. I might want to kiss his showcase too much. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it just
got pucker up, maybe.
I got Trench, and I'm like, can I go Trench Blue? No, yeah. I don't need that guy. You know, what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, just grinding out the game. No, I do think there's actually some interesting things there. Daedra Colossus did actually take a PQ this weekend, and I'm curious to see how she kind of plays into that, because you want to talk about like decks that, you know, can get you a lot of answers and deal with stuff, and Daedra, like, you know, you kind of got a lose-lose situation with Daedra. You know, you either let him draw a card or you let him do damage. And either one is that doesn't really feel good. And then if she's drawing cards, she's drawing more solutions. She has other ways to draw solutions currently. And then you have the extra health that might keep you in the race long enough to like make it out of there. And then Daedra's, you know, innate ability sort of negates the five card start with Colossus. So, you know, you look at it and she could be really interesting. And on top of the fact that she also flips really early. So like, you know, if you're worried about aggro and things like that, she can give you like the ability to kind of deal with some of those things that are there. You know, stabilize the board, you know, in addition to all the health that you have.
Yeah, Daedra Blue is, I mean, red blue just control, villainy control has kind of always been a thing too. People play it, right? It used to be Bossk.
Or Vader.
Vader before that.
Yeah. Or Vader before that.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be another thing in the future too with Law. So, you know, can't sleep on it. Daedra Blue, yeah, no, it's a fascinating, like, you're right, Rob. I think that there are the people who play that deck and play it well do really well. Like, yep. It's. Like it takes, I think there is a lot of finesse with that deck. A lot of big brain stuff that, like, you might get discouraged after like playing 10 games and like losing all of them because you don't really, you're just like, let me just remove stuff like that. Or like, I'm going to ping every time. Like, you have to really think through the lines. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there are times where you need to pass, or there are times where you need to claim and you shouldn't like do her ability, right? Or you need to do her ability to force your opponent into a weird position. And then you can then, all right, it's fine. You let me ping it. Great. Now I can also unlock Vigilance and then heal and then discard or whatever, right? Uh-huh. Like, there's so many mini mechanics with Daedra Blue that make that deck, for those who are more cerebral in nature in that sense, it's really fun for you. For everyone else, there's
feels bad. Getting pillaged, having them draw cards on you. It's like, oh.
Yeah, I've played in informal play Daedra Blue one time, and it was 1-3. We played four matches, and I won one game. I was like, I don't like this.
It's like, you don't get to play. That's the thing with these control decks. And it's worse, too, when they discard your cards as well. So it's like...
Which is going to make playing Saw Gerrera so good next set.
Yeah.
Because you play a unit, you're all right, let me just attack it. It's gone. What are you going to do?
I actually do like the idea with Daedra there, though, because if you can go... Like, just thinking this out, it's like, particularly in terms of the fact that you get access to red, you get access to pillage, you get access to a lot of like hand hate in red, and suddenly now on top of control against these Han 1 players specifically, I think there is some room there for this deck to maybe do well with a lot of Han 1 out there.
I think so. It's an uphill battle for sure, and like, you like, if you can spike their Chewbacca's, like Han 1 green Chewbacca's and stuff, like, there's really not a lot of answers they have at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That can be tough. So what you're saying is, I think I should start playing Daedra Blue for a reason.
I think that's what you should start doing.
That's what I should start doing.
Gross.
You heard it here first, guys.
Well, either that or
I do want her showcase,
on the Kylo
though.
Data Vault,
I feel like,
brother.
Yeah.
Kylo Data Vault is also a really good deck.
That deck is so much fun.
But that one also is like, you can't rely on just removal. You have to time your thing, because like, if Kylo just gets blown away after you flip him, it's just like, game's over. You're like, I think
with his deck, you really need to know your sideboard and how other sideboards are siding into you. Because like, for me, I think I'm 66% on game one. I can win any deck. And then games two and three, that's when it's like, oh, well, I got to get that second game somehow. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. That's tough. Okay. Any last thoughts, Rob?
I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's going to be, unless something changes in the next 2 weeks, which I'm very, very highly doubtful of, somebody's going to have to try and figure out how to solve Han. If they can come out of left field, because this is really my prediction. I do think we're going to see a lot of Hans out there. But I do think that in the next 2 weeks, people are going to be testing these solutions to Han. And my gut tells me that if somebody's got the right deck that can play into these and survive, that's going to be our regionals winner.
Cool. Fair enough. All right. So moving on to the next segment. Our main segment today is going to be discussing how to value a card. If to determine if it's good, not like, is this card worth $10, worth $5? Right. It's like, is this card that we have in our hand, is it playable? Right? Like, is it worth playing? Why is it worth playing? And the mechanic, the thoughts behind it, right? This is supplementary to materials that are already out there. So for example, Star Wars Unlimited FFG, the designers actually released a statement about this, of how they design cards and like why they think about it. You can see that on the StarWarsLimited.com website if you so desire. You can find that article. We are going to add to that, but also kind of review some of the topics that are there. This topic comes from a listener who watched one of our videos recently. They talk about how, you know, Deep Magic does this from time to time, like valuing cards in that sense. So we're going to do at least a cursory review. I mean, this could be a very deep topic into what cards are playable. But for now, we're going to just focus on, okay, is this what makes a card valuable to play?
Yep.
Right. And so, yeah, so at least for me, and I'll go first while, you know, you guys have some time to think. But I think the first thing you have to ask yourself is what format are you using this card for? Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what people generally think about with Star Wars Unlimited, there are a variety of formats. There's constructed or called premier, which means you have a 50-card deck, you have a 10-card sideboard, right? Unless your cards allow you to have more or less than that, right? That, and it's a pre-constructed deck that you bring to a tournament. There's also limited. So limited is a format where you either draft cards or you open packs, you build a smaller 30-card deck, and then you play, right? A game. There's also Twin Suns. There's also Trilogy, right? There's all the, you know, Twin Suns is where it's you against three other people. Whoever, you know, it's chaos, right?
And the Trilogy is one of a card in that deck.
Yeah. Yeah. One of a card, one of each card in that deck. Yep. And then so mechanics have to potentially affect more than one person or can be affected by more than one person. So that's something to think about. And then Trilogy right now. So Trilogy is three completely different decks that you have to like, best two out of three essentially against your opponent. There's different construction requirements there, right? So pretty much constructed, but just three decks. So I think for me, like the first thing when you're valuing a deck or value a card is like, look really hard. What are you trying to accomplish with this card? Right. Yeah. Because sometimes it might make sense. Sometimes, you know, it won't, right? That is rule. Mm-hmm. I would say rule number one.
Fair. Well, yeah. Cause then once you have that, then it's like, all right, we're going to just focus on Premier now. Now, if we're focusing on Premier, let's take a look at what these cards are, right?
Yeah. And yeah, like one of the things all of the games of Twin Suns that I play, but in seriousness, one of the things that I do look for when you're building like a Twin Suns deck is when a card says each opponent, right out of the gate, you're like, that's going in my Twin Suns deck. I don't care what it is, it's going in my Twin Suns deck. Because like for example, Merciless Contest, which got some play, at, you know, during Twilight and the beginning of Jump to Lightspeed, is basically you play a card, you play the card. It's a three cost. It gets rid of, each player has to, kill a unit basically. So it's kind of like Power of the Dark Side, except when you play that in Twin Suns, that means everybody at the table, all four players have to kill a unit. And it just lends to the chaos.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think if we go baseline, right, let's start from the bottom. One way to measure cards is by stats.
Mm-hmm.
For every one cost, starting at one, so a one cost unit should be roughly a 2/2, right? Like 2/2 attack, 2 health for one cost. That's like the baseline. There may be cards that cost one, cards that cost one, but have different stats, but generally there's a drawback, right? That drawback might be, so for example, cartel, that there's a cartel, cartel space, not it's a card. Yeah. It's the space card. It's a one cost two, three.
Oh, it's the syndicate, the syndicate runner or something like that.
That has a smuggle on it. That has a smuggle on it, or not smuggle. It has a bounty on it.
Bounty, so like, yeah.
Yeah, it
cartel
has a bounty
spacer,
on it.
I think you're right.
Cartel spacer.
It's a cartel turncoat.
It's called cartel spacer. It's
a cartel turncoat.
Yeah, cartel turncoat. It's a 2/3, better stats for one cost, but it has a bounty. So when it gets defeated, your opponent gets a card. So that's the drawback. But generally speaking, you want for every one starting at one, it's a 2/2, and then everyone above that, every cost above that is another +1/+1. So for example, a good two cost card should have six points worth of stats.
Yep.
Whether that's three attack and three health or two attack, four health, that's generally where you're trying to go. That helps you, that gives a guideline on, is this card good?
Yep.
Do you guys agree? And I don't know.
I would agree with that if the base example is you have the Dark Trooper from Secrets of Power. Yeah. So you have the Dark Trooper from Secrets of Power, or you have Battlefield Marine from the original set, Spark of Rebellion. Those are both Spark two cost green 3/3s. Vanilla, nothing else. That's just the stat line that you get for it.
Yeah. Corey, you wanted to say something?
No, I was going to say, I agree with what you're saying. If it's a blank card, if it's just all you're just looking at is stats, then that's absolutely what you're looking for. If you're not getting anything else, you need to have those numbers, right? You need to be like the Knights of Ren is a 3-cost 4/4, right? You need that. Otherwise, there's no value in that card anymore.
Yeah. That's the key there.
Let's talk about what that means. So there are a variety of things that can be on a card. What that means, there could be keywords. Keywords are things like Sentinel, which means that an opponent has to target that card. They can't hit your base. It's a body blocker. Something like Shield, where like if someone attacks your unit, it takes away all damage is taken by the shield, not just one point, which is very useful. So it could also have an ability. Like you said, like Corey said, that ability could be like, when played, this thing happens. When defeated, this thing happens. So in lieu of stats, it has an ability that powers it up, right? That's what we're saying.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And as you get higher in cost, you need your cards to do more than and be impactful when you're playing them because it costs so much, right? So.
Yep.
But yeah, if we're starting off on a lower tier, let's say like a 2-cost, what the heck, A-wing? Is that not A-wing? Is it the Green Squadron A-wing, right? That's a staple in Sabine. It's a 1/3, so initially you're like, this doesn't look good, but it's got raid too. So now it's hitting a 3/3, which gives it, you know, value there, right? So then as you go up in the cost of the card, if you look at Poe is a 5-cost 6/6. So he's got great stats, but then he's also giving you an ability on attack, which is one of the best abilities in the game.
And he's a legendary. So that's a well-designed legendary that fits that, where it's a hard card. It's supposed to be a hard card to get. It's supposed to impact the board in some point or fashion. Maybe not immediately, but definitely the turn you get to attack with him, right? He gets really, really good. He has 3 on attacks. You could do all 3. go ahead.
If you can afford it, which is a cost of discarding a card. If you can afford it, you can do 3 different things. So it is very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the key, though. And Corey, you kind of hit on it. It's like as you go up in curve, though, like so the more the units cost, when I'm saying up in curve, I mean in terms of cost, you need your cards to do more things, particularly when you play them. So like Poe at 5, he's a little bit overstatted, quote unquote, and he has some very strong abilities. But the counter to that is that he doesn't do anything when he drops. Now, a lot of people play him with ECL to give him ambush, which is what makes him very, very strong. Sometimes even just playing him, particularly if you play him early, say with Han 2, then it's also kind of scary because now it's like, all right, it came out earlier than most things have the ability to deal with him. And so now you have, now he can kind of sit out for a turn and survive, and you might actually get to attack with him. You know, but beyond five, I think it gets really, really important that you have things that happen when you play the card.
I would actually say Poe is perfectly statted. He's right on curve with stats. He's a five cost for 6/6, right? So it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? So that's a two cost. It's like the cost should be like right around the thing. It's his ability that really spikes him up, right? Because he could do 8 with an on attack ability. He could discard a card if you so to, or discard an upgrade, right?
Yeah.
So which is like really, really valuable. I think so. Yeah, it's perfect. And let's dig into the next topic you talked about there, like something that impacts the board.
Yep.
So another thing that makes cards generally good. So Corey mentioned the Knights of Ren card is a 4 cost 4/4 or 3 cost 4/4.
It's a
3 cost 4/4, which is exactly perfect in terms of like this is what a stat. These are the baseline stats of what it should be if you have no ability. It's also not an uncommon. It's not a rare or it's not a legendary. So it's just like a blank. It's like a vanilla card, right? So it should have stats. Immediate impact is something that you definitely have to evaluate because whatever you can do to compress actions or do more with your turn, because this is like, this card game is different than all the other ones. It's like, you do something, I do something. You do something, I do something, right? The more that a card can do, the more valuable it is.
Yep.
Right? In my humble opinion. And I think that's like a generally accepted practice. So we talk about like action cheating and stuff like that, but like, when it comes to mind, maybe Corey, you can go first. Is there anything that comes to mind of an ability that is very, very, very useful as an example of what this means, like immediately impacting the board?
Yeah, absolutely. The one card that I want to like point out now, especially with rotation, is Anakin Skywalker, Champion of Mortis. The vigilance costs no villain or hero aspect, so he is super valuable in all the decks that you can play. So what makes this card so valuable now is that he can go in a hero deck, he can go in a villain deck, and at the cost, he's a 6 cost 5/7. So he's got good stats. Like if you combine it all, it's around what you'd expect. A little lower.
It's a little lower, but impact.
His impact when you play him is amazing, because if you can get a hero card and a villain card, you will be able to negate the damage and the health of a card. So essentially you're just saying this card is now going to be 3 attack, 3 health less. And that means you can just defeat things that are at 3 health. And if you can do that twice, you are the value you get from that card is the most value you're going to see in a deck. And then if you can ambush that card out, oh my God, it's like you're 3 for 1 in one turn. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, I want to expand on that just a little bit before we move on to you, Rob, for an example. So we talk about the stats. It's actually a little understated, because if you actually equate to like Poe is at 5 cost 6/6. Anakin essentially is a 6/6, but it's split between 5 and 7, right? Yeah. 5 attack, 7 health. But the value, like you said, what you're getting with the removal, right? If you think about other cards that do removal, like Make an Opening is a -2/-2 with +2 heal, right? That costs, I think, 2. That thing that costs 2, right? Yep. If you just equate that, maybe with the heals, roughly, that's like another 4 to 6 cost of resources for removal that you're not paying for, essentially. So the value there, the value proposition with this card, and again, it's a legendary, it should be good like that, is just massive. Like you said, 3 for 1. So a 6 cost is essentially doing almost 10 to 11 resource worth of stuff. Yeah,
12 points of damage.
Yeah, it's massive, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, go ahead, Rob. I know you wanted to get into
something. Well, it's kind of what you're alluding to. I mean, again, another card that in a similar vein, the Vader Twilight of the Apprentice, the blue villainous Vader has a similar kind of impact when he hits the board, caveat being if you can ambush him. He comes on, he shields himself, and then he shields another enemy unit and then he has an on attack that when he attacks, he can defeat a unit that has a shield. So if you can get him to have ambush, and this is one that we've talked about in the past, but ambush being probably the single strongest keyword in the game, giving your ability to attack the turn that you play a card, even though it is only against another unit, is just really, really good, particularly if you can get it onto a unit that has an on attack. Now you're able to trigger the thing that's giving that card a little bit more value, even if it might be understated, and then continuing to do damage, remove things from the board, and then get the on attack ability, which usually will have some good effects. In the case of Vader, it's a particularly strong effect, which is probably also why his stat line isn't particularly high. It's a 5-6 as opposed to Anakin at a 5-7 for 6 cost, but he's shielding himself and giving, and potentially removing something that's greater than 3 health.
Yeah. Talking about removal, so like we're talking about defeating units, but you could defeat cards, right? Yeah. Like, so an example of what makes cards good is like, what is it? How is it interacting with not only the board state, like the units in front of you, but how is it potentially interacting with the deck or the hand or anything like that, mm-hmm. right? And I want to close this segment with like another card that like helps you understand and appreciate why this can be good. So there is a legendary card that came out in Jump to Lightspeed set 4. It's a blue villain blue villain card that costs 11. It's called the Annihilator. Or it's called Annihilator, not the. It's called Annihilator. Yep. It's 12-12. So it comes out late. It's a capital ship. That's fine. It's a closing kind of card. But its ability is amazing. It has a when played, when defeated ability, right? When played, you just defeat a unit. Gone. It's annihilated, right? But on top of that, right. Not only are you putting that to the discard pile, if you do, you also get to search a controller's deck. So controller could be anybody. This card can be in a whatever. It can be Twin Suns. It can be whatever, and controller's deck and hand, right? For each card with a unit's name and discard them. So you can like play it and get rid of like, let's say Luke Skywalker. Any card, then there's a variety of Luke Skywalkers. Any card of a Luke Skywalker that has that title printed on it, even if it's unique, if it says Luke Skywalker, all gone. You can get rid of 9 Luke Skywalkers and put them on the discard pile.
Or when the defeated Falcon. Yeah, I was going to say, the best is when you do it again. Hold on.
Yeah, or you do it again when it dies. You're defeating something else that's on the board. Or you could do something even more massive. All right, Millennium Falcon. I'm going to name Millennium Falcon. Defeat the Millennium Falcon on the board, and like 12 copies of Millennium Falcon in someone's deck, and they're just gone.
Feels really good,
you know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to, again, so when we're evaluating cards, like common cards have really nothing going on with them, generally speaking. As you increase in not only rarity, uncommon, comp rare, whatever, but also uniqueness, unique cards typically are also, they have a little star next to the name, those are diamond, those typically also are better, quote unquote. Yeah. So you have to look at all of these different mechanics. There's also traits. There's also like you'd have like a billion like traits. Like traits are like Imperial Vehicle, Capital Ship, Rebel, Yoda, not Yoda, Jedi. Like there's all
a
these
lot
things
that goes in.
There's
this.
A lot of things you have to go into it. And I think this is just a good example, a primer for anyone who's out there. Like you're trying to evaluate if you're new to the game, why is this card good? How can I build a deck that's better? Starts with the cards.
Yeah. So just as a quick like summary of what to look for. Like when you just look at a quick card, the main thing is, are the stats good? And is there an ability that the card is going to impact the board when you are playing it or when you're using it? Those are the things you want to look at real quick. As a quick glance, you see the card. Are the stats good? They're higher than the cost, double or more. Then we're in a good shot pot.
Import the board or the deck at hand.
Yeah.
Things to think about. So anyway, I hope that was helpful. I forgot who the listener was, but hopefully that was helpful for you. This was really fun, I think. Guys, thank you so much for spending some time with me on a Wednesday night. Congratulations to McLean or TC McLean or for who won the mat. We'll get that shipped out to you. Everyone else out there, please remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends. We love having friends. And until next time, may the force be with you.